Brad Sesmat Show, broadcasting live from the Skyview Network Studios.
Good Tuesday. Thanks for being with us. You have Ty Detmer coming on today, and you're like, what are you, the History Channel? No, he's the offensive coordinator at BYU. BYU is playing the University of Arizona Wildcats over Labor Day weekend. In fact, we have the choice of going to watch ASU-NAU or BYU and U of A over in Glendale. They're like an hour apart, I think, Eric, from what, if I recall correctly, a week from Saturday. So it's the start of the college football season. And looking very much forward to talking with Ty Detmer. He actually was coaching high school, and BYU called him and said, why don't you come on back? I remember Ty Detmer when he won the Heisman. Yeah, I mean, he just threw for a boatload of yards, and now he's getting it done up at BYU. That BYU-U of A game, from what I've heard, this is not shocking. There will be much more blue and white BYU Cougar colors in the stands in Glendale than there will be red and blue of U of A. Not a shocker. Which one are you going to go to? I don't even know if you're going to either one, but if you had to choose.
Oh, no. We have it all scheduled out. We look ahead and plan out these
things. What are you doing? Which one are you doing?
I'm going to be tag teaming with Jordan Hamm, one of our coworkers, covering the ASU-NAU midnight kickoff. And Jared will be handling U of A-BYU 11 p.m. kickoff. So. No, in all seriousness, I think one is a 7:45 start, the ASU game, and the Cats kick off at 7 or 7:30. So if you're on the East Coast, take a five-hour energy at around 10 p.m.
Well, just for you and Jordan, I mean, you guys are going to be there. They're going to be throwing the football still at 11:30. 7:45 game, there's no way that goes just 3.5 hours.
Thank God that ASU-Texas Tech game doesn't start at 7:45 because I literally would be getting home at 3 in the morning.
3 in the morning,
but
sure.
It's okay. I mean, you know what? It's college football season. I don't have anything to complain about.
No, I mean, we're very much looking forward to it. It's just we know, like, I don't care that there's going to be more BYU fans at a football game than U of A fans. I don't care. It's very smart of Greg Byrne to schedule a game in Glendale. If they get 10,000, 20,000, 30,000 fans, it's a good way for them to get into their boosters, to be more in the Valley. They'll probably bring more games back here. Then Arizona State can't just stand around and say, we're ASU, we own the Valley. I think this is great competition. You know, when GCU goes to U of A and plays them in basketball this year, I think that's terrific for our state. It's what matters. When NAU comes down here, I don't think the NAU-ASU game is going to be a pushover in the first half, okay? First half. ASU should win and win convincingly. But the quarterback at NAU and their wide receiver at NAU are both very, very talented players. And, you know, for those of you that want a 60-0 beatdown, I don't see that happen. Am I wrong on that one?
No, I don't think you're wrong at all. I mean, everyone saw how Carson Wentz evolved at a different level and became a high draft pick.
Yep.
There are some whispers out here on the West Coast that by the time Case Cookus is done, he is only a sophomore with similar dimensions. He could be maybe not like a top five pick, but he will definitely show up on some pro football radars if he continues to evolve his game. I mean, last year he was the best freshman in the country. So
right. He was. I mean, we're not making this stuff up here. I'm looking forward to the college football season just from this standpoint that nobody's expecting anything here. And a year ago, Kirk Herbstreit had ASU pegged as a Final Four team, which didn't happen, didn't even come close to happening. And so, you know, the pro season, we all know what the expectations are for the Cardinals. They're off today. But I think on the college end of things, it's really interesting. Rich got pursued last year, or Rich pursued some jobs, depending on who you believe. And he decided to stay at U of A. U of A is trying to make a statement here in the Valley. ASU is trying to get through their stadium build out. A year from now, I think there'll be tremendous buzz when that stadium is complete. Right now, it's where am I sitting and why are you moving my seats? I was at the ASU kickoff lunch. I thought that was the best line from Ray Anderson and Todd Graham. You know, we had nothing to do with your seat location. Blame this guy. Because really, that's all I've heard from people. They're moving my seat. What about on the field?
Well, and last year started with such a slippery slope for ASU. I mean, you go into Texas and play Texas A&M, which essentially was as close to a home game for the Aggies as possible. With all the expectations, even Todd Graham saying, this is the best team I've ever coached. Our goal is to go 14-0 or whatever. And after that first thud, it sort of just set the landscape for what was going to be a really up and down, mostly down season.
Well, and I thought it was interesting Friday I went to the kickoff luncheon as mentioned, but when Todd spoke at this luncheon, it was, we're going to let our talking be done on the field this year.
Smart.
And he said it twice.
Smart.
And, you know, we're in this business, so we take words that are being said at these functions. We've been to enough of these functions where there's not open mics and there's not notebooks and it's a different audience, and I try to be sensitive to that. But at the same time, when I see a coach who has always been rah-rah in front of, and I've had people at ASU through the years that said, we wish we could dial him back a little bit. They didn't dial him back just a little bit. I mean, he was way dialed back. And you know, he got into the whole thing. It's great to be a Sun Devil and all that stuff, which is fine. But what has made Todd Graham has been his bravado. That is what has made him. And the fact they won a bunch of games, and now he's in a spot where these are all of his players. A lot of his assistants have moved on, but he's brought in some very talented assistants. And so it's a wait and see.
And we're not,
it really should be wait and see. There should be no waving of maroon and gold. There should just be, let's see.
We're not reinventing the wheel when we say if ASU's quarterback, fill in the blank, whoever they pick, doesn't perform well, ASU's not going to have a good year. That's just the reality of the situation, especially in today's college football landscape.
See, I'll disagree with you on that. I'll disagree
with you. In what way?
All you have to do, if you're Manny Wilkins, and I believe it's going to be Manny to start with, mm-hmm. okay? All you have to do is turn around because you have two very talented running backs.
Okay.
Okay?
Agree.
So, and if you throw the ball 15 to 20 times in a game, that's it. We're not asking you to throw 30 to 40 times. Then really, you shouldn't screw this thing up,
you? But when teams start stacking the box and they know that you're pretty much one-dimensional, that great running game isn't so great.
Well,
and did you see how many points ASU allowed last year? I mean, even if they're better, they're still going to give up 30 to 35 points
a
game.
That's what I care about more than, I don't think the quarterback is going to get them beat.
I completely disagree. You just can't win, Brad, in elite conferences if you don't have a good quarterback.
If your defense, okay, last year, let's look at Washington last year.
Okay.
Okay, Washington went with a young quarterback last year.
Yep.
And he got better and better.
He did.
He made some mistakes along the way. I was up there freezing my keister off last year and watched a game in horrific conditions. But nonetheless, he's going to be really good.
Mm-hmm.
They had a pretty darn good defense last year.
They did.
Right?
And what did that get them? 8 wins? 7 wins?
But the quarterback came along and got better as the season progressed. Jake Browning. I'm not suggesting that Manny Wilkins, Eric, is going to go out and tear things up. He just doesn't. Don't get us beat here in the first 3-4 weeks of the season. I agree with you. Defensively is where I'm looking at them saying, what are we doing here, guys? Because you can say this kid's this talented. And, you know, I see some stuff that's out there that people write or put on social about this kid was the greatest in high school and this kid looks amazing. And yeah, he's going against nobody. So I know you've got to fill space for a month and hype this thing up, but let's just dial it back and see if any of these guys can play.
Is 7-6 or 8-5 a good season?
I think for them, it is a transition year, but is there a segment that it feels as though if Todd struggles and doesn't beat U of A, there's always going to be that segment that Todd's going to be feeling some heat about his job.
Bingo.
And the answer is yes.
Absolutely.
That he will be. Todd is going to feel some heat this year. If they get off to a slow start, beat NAU, but it's not convincing, there's going to be some of those people.
Oh, in the first game, I mean, I don't even really care about the first game because it's like an exhibition game. I mean, this
is
the
remember they played New Mexico years ago and they lost to New Mexico
at
home?
That was a long time ago, though. It can happen. It definitely can happen. But if you're a big underdog and you're playing a powerhouse, you want them in the first week of the year. You don't want them in week 4. You don't want them in week 9. You want them in week 1.
So if U of A beats BYU convincingly,
I don't think that's going to happen. Okay. But continue.
And if ASU scuffles against NAU, and you don't think that's going to happen,
I don't. No.
Okay. But they're both going to be here in the Valley, and Sunday morning there's going to be a whole lot of this and that about the game the night before. And ASU beat NAU by 50. Well, they should have. Oh, U of A lost by 20 to BYU. It shows they're not any good. I'm already hearing that's going to happen from people that wear maroon shorts.
It's a little bit short-sighted, though, to think like that after the first game of the year.
I agree with you. But that's what happens to those that wear maroon shorts and gold socks. They see it as they want to see it rather than here's what's going on with these two programs. Like last year, you and I sat here on opening, leading up to the season. I think we even said last spring, U of A has no shot to win this year because they have no bye week. They have none. They have zero shot.
Truth.
They're going to be so beat up. So last year was predictable. Mm-hmm. I think this year, ASU's defense isn't any good in the secondary against Texas Tech and Cal. We're going to be looking at a 1-2 team, and people are going to be after Todd. If they come out and win those two games, I would say it's a terrific start to the season for them.
And I agree. I think both of those games are really flip of the coin.
Yes.
I mean, you see people on Twitter like, ASU should be 4-0. Well, did you watch Texas Tech's offense last year?
Did you watch the secondary of ASU last year? Did you see the disorganization? Doesn't matter that you changed a coach. Can't fire the players. Well, we have all these new players. Are they working together as a team yet? Again, it's easy to hype the thing up. I'm just saying, you know, relax a little bit. Man, the Diamondbacks game last night was just dreadful. We're going to talk to Bob Nightingale here in a couple minutes about where they are, because Bob brought the sledgehammer out nationally on our hometown nine, our hometown heroes. So Bob Nightingale next, and then Ty Detmer a little bit later on in the show. Todd Marinovich is in the news cycle today, which is sad. Todd Marinovich was somebody that I remember all the way back watching him in high school in Southern California. He was a big bleeping deal. And, you know, when I see the story about him getting arrested, that's a tough deal. So we'll get into that coming up after we talk to Bob Nightingale, the Michael Phelps house, and some stuff about the Cardinals, too. We'll do all that straight ahead. But up next, it's Bob Nightingale, USA Today baseball columnist, MLB Network. That's next, sports360az.com. We partner with the Arizona Republic, AZ Central Sports. I'm Brad Sussmat. Coming up in about 20 minutes, Ty Detmer, BYU offensive coordinator, quarterback coach, Heisman Trophy winner. The Cougars will be taking on U of A next week in the start of the college football season. But as mentioned, we've been talking quite a bit about Bob Nightingale's USA Today baseball column, USA Today baseball columnist, MLB Network. Really brought the hammer out, and it's about time. Arizona Diamondbacks ponder replacing La Russa and Stewart after just 2 years. Bob Nightingale joins us here on the program with Brad Sussmat. I appreciate your time, and I'm just going to start on the back end of this for the fans and take the drama out of this. Do you think that Tony and Dave are going to be gone, Bob?
Right now, I do. I don't think it's the right move, but I think something has to change Ken Kendrick's mind for them to not make changes. I'm not sure if Dave Stewart and John Watson would go and Tony La Russa would stay or all three would go. But I think something has to be done to change Ken Kendrick's mind right now, because I think he's very frustrated with the way the season's going, particularly after the high expectations.
Okay, so from your view, is this thing in Arizona an absolute mess because the owner is impatient? This would be 7 GMs in 11 years. Or do you think there's some validity in making a change that they just flat missed?
You know, I think it's just way premature. It's almost unprecedented in baseball to make a change after 2 years. I mean, Dave Stewart hasn't been on the job for 24 months yet. And, you know, last season was great. This season's been terrible. No two ways about it. But, you know, usually GMs get 5 or 6 years, to make their stamp on things. You know, if this was the case, you would see a lot of GMs fired. Why did he go back to Dane Moore? I've been fired 8 years before they won the World Series. Dave Dombrowski, training Wade Rainey Johnson, who was a Hall of Famer. John Daniels, making some of the moves he made early on. So these things can happen, but it's unprecedented to make a change this quickly.
Talking with Bob Nightingale, USA Today baseball columnist, MLB Network insider. Dave Stewart, now, he has an agency that his wife is running in San Diego, correct, Bob?
Correct, yeah.
And the agency, since Dave has not been there, from my understanding, what I've been hearing is it's not on as solid a ground as it once was with Dave there, and perhaps there's a push to get him to come back to the agency. Have you heard the same sorts of things?
No, not at all. I mean, Dave ran a very successful agency, and of course, a big loss when his partner Dave Henderson you know, died about a year ago. A tremendous loss.
Mm-hmm.
So Dave likes doing this job. I mean, it'll be a very painful to his pride. And he's done everything that has been the game. You know, been a pitching coach, bench coach, you know, scouting director, assistant GM. He deserves this, but I don't think he deserves to be let go just 2 years on a job just because of one bad trade.
But would he go back to the agency and it would be a soft landing for him, is my point? I mean, he's got a place to go. He's got an exit if something didn't work out here.
Oh, sure. I mean, he's not hurting for money. I mean, had a great baseball career with, you know, pension and everything else. So, no, it's not. We're not going to see Dave Stewart on the streets by any means. I'm not sure if he'd go back to the agency, but he could do that. But the bottom line is he doesn't want to do that. He wants to do this. That's why he took it in the first place. And when General Russo had to talk him into it, and he says, you know what, I'm all in. I want to make the Diamondbacks a playoff team again. And I don't see that far away. I think, you know, a year from now, if you want to make the move, fine. I just think it's too early right now.
In La Russa's case, is he happy doing this, or does he feel too much pressure coming from above him, from your view?
Well, this is something he wanted to do. He was ready to do it for a number of years. You know, he was kind of hoping for Seattle Mariners there at one point. But he's ready to do it with any team. You know, and I think, you know, Diamondbacks are probably unique in this, but there are different people making different calls. You know, whether it's Ken Kenrick or the president, Derek Hall, or other people, it's just there's a lot of voices in. And sometimes it's like, just leave the front office alone. Mm-hmm. Let them do their thing and judge by what they do, not by any interference.
You mentioned Derek Hall's name. Is he safe in all of this? Because there has been one constant through all of these GMs, and that has been Derek. Is he safe through all this with Ken?
I would think so. I mean, I haven't heard anything otherwise. I think the relationship is very good. They talk all the time. You know, maybe that's a problem, too. It's almost like, you know, Derek Hall's always had a very close relationship with Ken Kenrick, but the GMs have not. Kevin Towers had no relationship with Kenrick. I don't think Josh Burns did. And I don't think Dave Stewart does. So maybe that's part of the problem, too, is just that it's not all integrated.
In terms of the manager here, somebody's got to go. And if it's Chip and Phil Nevin comes here, which seems the most plausible, is that the only move that could be made here in Arizona as you see it right now, or the move that should be made? Because something's got to change, Bob, I would think, after this season. You can't just say A.J. Pollock and Shelby Miller, Pollock hurt and Miller couldn't figure it out, and that's the reason why they're so bad.
Oh, I agree, Brad. I mean, I would think this is Chip Hill's last season. I think there's a lot of people running interference. It could have been, you know, Chip Hill could have been gone several months ago,
mm-hmm.
and it didn't happen. But I would think that, you know, they would replace him and several of his coaches, you know, no matter who's in that front office.
Okay, and when you say running interference, that is, again, going back to the dysfunctionality that's going on here. I mean, you brought up the Shelby Miller to Florida could have happened and they could have got him out of here. Instead, we're sitting here looking at Dansby Swanson this week in Arizona and wondering where Shelby Miller is. Is there too much interference between all these parties, too many people laying claim to their own ground, I guess, as to why we have this problem all the time here in Arizona, Bob?
Yeah, there's a lot of interference, but I will say, you know, it's becoming the standard. You're seeing a lot of interference in other clubs as well. You're hearing, you know, stories throughout the industry on things that were supposed to happen and didn't. So, yeah, I mean, I would think it'd be nice just to, you know, for the ownership group, step back, let Tony La Russa and Dave Stewart make their moves, you know, whether you agree with them or not. Then, you know, let them dictate their own fate by how the Major League Club performs. But, you know, you can't step in and blame them for what happens when you're a part of it as well.
Okay, before you go, the stadium issue out here, what do you make out of that from your perspective? You walk through Chase Field. You've been there before. It's not Fenway. I get it. It's not Wrigley. I get it. Does the ownership group here have claim that this is not the facility it needs to be? And what do you see happening on that front?
Well, first of all, it's a beautiful facility. No question about it. They did a great job with the upkeep and everything else. The only thing is that they built that too big. They got too excited. And they built that ballpark way too big, just like it did in Denver. And so they did the same thing in Cleveland. Now, how Denver and Cleveland corrected it was building, you know, beautiful bars in right field and a place to go. And that's what the Diamondbacks need to do, too. So it's just a question of who pays for it. But I think if the Diamondbacks, you know, got some funding or they want to split that up, and they can do stuff in right field and make it a much smaller ballpark, then I think all problems are solved.
Hey, good stuff. And it's good to see you dig your teeth into what's going on out here, because I feel like they've just kind of flown under the radar being really, really bad. And it was nice to see a sledgehammer brought out nationally on what's going on here. Appreciate it as always, Bob. Thanks.
Sure, my pleasure. Thanks, Brian.
See you. Bob Nightingale, USA Today baseball columnist, MLB Network insider. Always good to catch up with Bob. You know, what do you want me to say here, guys? There's no magic wand. You know, you look last night, first inning, base hit Braves. There's Goldie over at first base laughing with the guy that got the base hit. Of course, Goldschmidt gets the game-winning home run. But is it just too nice of a group that's been put together? I just don't see that much grit. It was a nice comeback win last night, but I wouldn't say it was a piece of art either. I would not call it that by any stretch of the imagination. Sports360AZ.com. We partner with the Arizona Republic. AZ Central Sports. In about 10 minutes, Ty Detmer is going to Skype on in. BYU offensive coordinator, coach, 1980 Heisman Trophy winning quarterback. The Cougars come here to the Valley to play the U of A in football over Labor Day weekend out in Glendale. That's coming up later. Stay with us. Thanks again to Bob Nightingale being with us. Ty Detmer, his people just called. He's about 5-10 minutes late, so it'll be about 10:50. We'll talk with the offensive coordinator at BYU, Heisman Trophy winner, Ty Detmer, U of A next week against BYU. That's going to be a heck of a game, September 2nd. And we'll talk with Ty Detmer.
Yeah, they had the nerve to run practice long.
What is that all about?
I don't know. I mean, priorities here.
You've been
people.
To BYU?
Have I ever been?
Yeah.
No, it looks beautiful, though.
It is. When I did the play-by-play for San Diego State, I love doing games at Cougar Stadium. I hated doing basketball at BYU's arena, though. For whatever reason, because they were so bad, San Diego State was. And yeah, this was 20 years ago, but they would always schedule them as like the ESPN 10 o'clock game at night. And we would get, they had the whack going then, so that would be the late game.
And they'd pack like 17,000 people in the Marriott Center.
Marriott Center, and like the guys on BYU's team were just grown men versus these 18, 19-year-old kids from San Diego State that weren't any good to begin with. So we would get drilled. It's not often I say we, but I'm the play-by-play guy. So that's where you are doing the we and the us and the them. I try not to, but it was – I spent plenty of time in Provo and hated being there all day and night when it was just snowing and miserable. And so they're coming here. And I really hope U of A and ASU and GCU in basketball would make a habit of scheduling BYU every year. It doesn't matter to me if the stadium is sold out with blue and white. It doesn't matter. It's good. It's good for the Valley. So in the news cycle today, we have Todd Marinovich. And I can't poke fun at this story because this is just flat sad what's going on with Todd Marinovich. Todd Marinovich played for the LA Raiders. I remember going and covering Todd Marinovich when he was in high school in Southern California. And then Todd, of course, went over to USC. Then he went into the NFL. Todd Marinovich in Irvine, California, arrested for possession of meth. Todd Marinovich was naked when cops arrived. He was in a backyard. They got a call about a naked man on the Venta Spur walking trail Friday night. They found him nearby in a backyard. Searched the area, found a brown bag containing meth, weed, and Todd's ID.
And if that mugshot that you see on the screen right now doesn't just pretty much tell the story of Todd Marinovich's life, I mean, he's not that much. He's probably in between your age and my age.
He's 47, so you're right.
Yeah, he's just, like, look at him. Look at how old and battered.
That's a hard life right there.
Correct.
And back in the day, we would do shows, because our station was in LA and San Diego and Orange County, so we would get done doing shows, and we would automatically get into our vehicle and pile in 3-4 dudes, because we'd want to go see Todd Marinovich play. You know, I mean, there was legend around Todd Marinovich. Todd Marinovich was a typical Raider in Los Angeles back in the day. He's been struggling with substance abuse since his playing days. We all remember the Todd Marinovich dad, you cannot have McDonald's story, those of us back in the day. And those of you that aren't aware of Todd Marinovich, it was true. His dad didn't let him have fast food because he had him robocopped out to be the next big-time quarterback in the NFL. So that's a sad story, but it caught my eye. And we have Michael Phelps in the news cycle today, and it's all good. If you've noticed, I've made it through, what are we at, 41 minutes of today's show with not a mention of Lochte until now. And that's going to be the only mention of Lochte today because I need a break from it. And I'm sure there's more to come. So Michael Phelps has a house over in Paradise Valley. Have you seen this, Eric? Have you checked out this his digs that he's gotten into?
Only pictures. Looks nice. Wow, what a nice pool.
Right. Does he have a lap pool there? Could you imagine that? Do you guys have a lap pool here? I'm thinking, really? Do you need a lap pool? What do you do? Oh, I'm a swimmer.
Or he says, that's the last thing I want in my house.
Oh, yeah, yeah, right. Pool. Tear that out. Fill it in and make it a planter, right? So this caught my eye, and this is in Paradise Valley. Michael Phelps, new digs.
Nice.
Looks pretty good.
It's very clean, but it's not, it doesn't look gaudy.
What are you, a fashionista?
No, but I mean, look, that's
an interior decorator?
Looks like a really nice house, but Michael Phelps has, what, billions of dollars? Several million dollars?
It's good taste. Maybe he maybe he goes to IKEA.
Here's the thing.
Maybe find stuff on sale at yard sales.
I saw the picture of Robert Sarver's house.
Yeah.
And that was everything you would think Robert Sarver would live in.
What are you saying about Robert Sarver? Why'd you drag him into this?
He likes the expensive lifestyle, and he should. He's earned
maybe
every dollar.
Maybe he likes high-quality stuff.
I'm not saying...
he doesn't go to IKEA. Have you ever thought of it from that way?
I'm sure he doesn't.
Open the box and build this cabinet.
Honey, we got to hire some people to open the box right. And build this cabinet.
In my case, it's screwing the light bulb. I don't know how to do that.
Yeah, you can handle that.
Then there's Allie Rassman. She is in the news cycle day. Now, I have said on the air.
Olympic gymnast, by the way. Please say that because that, although that might be a household name to you.
Yeah.
I've said you go from Michael Phelps to Allie Rassman. Which is
I thought she was hot. Okay, if there's anything wrong with that? I'm married with four kids.
It's kind of weird.
She was cute. Do you want me to say cute instead of hot? Yeah, is that okay with you? We have Ty Detmer, by the way, in 5 minutes, unless Eric hangs up on me in this segment. Allie Rassman was she killed it on the mat at the Olympic Games. Okay, so in a video for Yahoo, U.S. gymnast Allie Rassman explained her dating preferences before getting a surprise at the end. A video man. There's Allie. All right. So at the end of this, here's this Raider. Oakland Raider tight end Colton Underwood asked her to accompany him on a double date with his teammate, Andrew East, and his wife, gymnast Shawn Johnson. It's really disappointing we didn't find out about this story until the Raiders had already played here, because clearly some news directors and morning show people would have gone head over heels live coverage with this soundbite of this guy, Colton Underwood, saying, yeah, I asked Allie out on a date. Could you imagine some of these poor people today trying to do journalism and being told that you've got to go out and interview this dude as to how he landed the date? So he asks her out. I'll give him credit on that one. She says he's, quote, very cute. And she's heard about Underwood before, and she sent out this tweet thanking Underwood for the video. Now, we didn't show the video because that's just a little too much for me on this show. I mean, we're all about sports and having fun here. This stuff's not brain surgery. Thanks for the sweet video. Looking forward to meeting you, Smiley. At least it wasn't something done over like the Jumbotron, right? It wasn't one of those deals where, hey, look up here, and the guy asks her out.
To me personally, nothing good ever happens at anything that involves a Jumbotron.
I disagree with you on that. What are you talking about? These people that go, Kiss Cam is how my son married this girl.
It's funny that my wife put on Kiss Cam at a Diamondback game sitting next to her brother. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's why
fun.
The Jumbotron is not good.
Did she do it?
No.
What are you talking about? She couldn't peck him on the cheek?
No.
What do you call? What is?
My brother-in-law mouthed. That's my sister.
Don't say mouthed and kissed. That doesn't work.
Well, that's what you do when you don't talk and you move your lips.
Oh, you mouth.
You mouthed.
You mouthed. Okay. When you're
past tense.
The girl, the mouth. Girl next to you, you don't mouth her. You don't say that. Don't use mouth. Anyways, this segment went nowhere.
There's a gap, and it's called the generation. This is where we sit.
No, it's not. No, it's not. All right.
Clearly, the Cardinals have the day off today. We're talking about.
It was good.
Olympians dating NFL players. Michael Phelps' house.
I would have put this in anyways. You want me to go through the
police blotter?
Robert Kimdiche practice yesterday. Peter King summed it up best yesterday. He used the line of today's NFL where the players treat August like self-preservation.
It's true.
Read the between the lines, which means this stuff doesn't mean jack. It's people like us have got to sit here and fill shows rather than have some fun with this. And for Peter to say that, it was just the best way to sum up this stuff going on in August. Like Bruce Arians said, most of our guys aren't going to play this weekend. Well, of course they're not going to play this weekend. It's the third preseason game. That's when you can really tell how the team is going to be, how they perform in the third preseason game. That was true 20 years ago, 15 years ago, 10 years ago. Stuff's just filling time. I'd rather have fun with this talking about Allie Rassman than third preseason games. Week of New England, I'm not doing Allie Rassman talk. I might mention it for a minute. Get me to the Patriots. Get through all this stuff. August has become like a wasteland for sports. It really has. You can analyze your fantasy teams. I get that. But when you got to sit here and go through the mighty matchup with the Texans who aren't going to play anybody, or the Chargers who didn't start Phillip Rivers and were supposed to take something from it, and the players tell you away from microphones this stuff's a complete waste, just get me to the regular season. Ty Detmer's next. I'm actually looking forward to Ty Detmer, very much so. I was looking forward to talking about Allie Rassman, too, for Eric Rain on my parade. I'm going to blame you on that segment. Sports360AZ.com. We partner with the Arizona Republic. AZ Central Sports.
You're drunk.
Let's talk BYU football for a couple of minutes. They get ready to take on the U of A in Glendale. The offensive coordinator and quarterback coach is a legend of BYU football. I was actually doing the play-by-play on November 16th. 1991 in San Diego in a game that I lost my voice because it would be 52-52 and Ty Detmer would throw for, I don't know how many yards you threw for, coach, but it was just one of those magical games. And now here you are back with the Cougars. Joining us via Skype is Ty Detmer. How are you, Ty?
Doing great. How are you?
Doing great. Let's look ahead towards U of A, and right off the top, Taysom Hill is going to be the Cougars quarterback, we hear, for the game.
Yeah, he's a fifth-year senior. We love his experience and his leadership and the things he brings to the table. So we're excited to, get him ready to go and then know that we have, kind of the future of the program, Tanner Mangum, right there behind him if needed.
Ty, when you made this move to come to BYU this year, why don't you give the fans a kind of a backstory of what led you back to BYU, the high school route that you took after your NFL career?
Yeah, just, it was kind of one of those things where I was coaching high school ball in Austin, had young daughters that kind of needed to grow up a little bit. And the timing just really felt right at this time with Coach Satake coming in and his vision of where he wanted to see the program go. And as we talked, just got more and more excited about the opportunity. And so here I am. And so it's been great. It's been a great transition with our staff, with the players. It's been refreshing to be back with this type of young man that, has a little more experience and a little more knowledge than the high school crew had in Austin. But, I'll miss those guys, but excited to be here at this point.
How much of a sales pitch, if any, did they have to put on you to come up there, Ty?
Well, it was tough. I mean, I had it pretty good where I was and enjoying life down there. Got a ranch in South Texas, and so it wasn't a big sales pitch. I just, you sit down, you talk with your wife about it, and it just felt right and the right time to make the move. My kids were good with it. I've got one married living here in Provo, and and one playing soccer at Dixie State in Southern Utah. So everybody's close, and it's good to be kind of together as a family here in this area.
One of the legends of college football, Ty Detmer, Heisman Trophy winner, now offensive coordinator at BYU. Who helped you to get to this point in terms of coaching? I know your family, your father, but along the way, are there some people that got you to this point, Ty, from an X and O coaching standpoint that you could single out?
Yeah, I think, you know, obviously you said it, my dad has been a coach, still coaching down in San Antonio area at Somerset High School. And just, you know, the lifestyle he's been able to lead and the effect he's had on young men always kept me close to the coaching ranks. And then along the way, Coach Edwards, Coach Chow here at BYU, Mike Holmgren, Steve Mariucci, you know, the many coaches that I played for in the NFL. Yeah, I always felt like at some point I'd be a coach and doing that. And really, as my career went, kind of became a little bit of a player coach, mentor for the younger quarterbacks on the teams as I got older. And so, you know, all along the way, you take bits and pieces from all those guys and then incorporate it into your own personality as well. And just try to be, you know, try to be you. And at the same time, you know, there's times where you got to kind of be that disciplinarian too, that you don't want to have to be as a coach, but that's part of it. So learn a little bit along the way from everyone.
How have you found recruiting to be, Ty? I'm sure that there's living back to the games. I referred to one of your magical games and the Heisman Trophy year, but how have you found recruiting and sitting in homes?
That's been a lot of fun. It's great to get to know the families of players that you're recruiting and get to establish that bond before they even come to school here. And then for me, you know, BYU is an easy sell because it was a place that I came to, and a lot of great things happened to me here, not just on the field, but off the field as well. So, you know, when I'm talking to kids, there's no sales pitch. It's just relaying the things that they'll be able to have, the different opportunities they'll have here at BYU and the things that, you know, they'll enjoy as a student here as well. So that part of it's been easy. The travel and things are the part that, you know, you don't enjoy as much, but being face-to-face with parents and kids has been a lot of fun.
When you flip it around and look at the opponent in U of A, what do you see in week one?
Well, it's, you know, the college football is kind of the great unknown. Pop Warner, they even have like Pop Warner jamborees where they get to scrimmage and play each other a little bit. High school has scrimmages. NFL has preseason games. And college football, you show up and play. And so there's the great unknown with a new defensive staff coming into Arizona. You can watch Boise film, but based on personnel, you never really know what you're going to see going in. And it's the same way for them with us. So it's, you know, that Coach Rodriguez has done a great job with the program. They're always going to play fast. They're going to play hard. And, you know, we know it's a great challenge going in and a great opportunity to be able to play in Phoenix and in front of some of our fans in that area as well. So it'll be an exciting night and looking forward to September 3rd.
When you say some of your fans, right now we're hearing it's going to be most of your fans. We're hearing it's going to be a blue and white out more than red and blue out, which is to be expected. There's a huge BYU following here in the Valley and in Arizona. So I think you're going to find a friendly crowd on that matchup that night.
Well, it'll be a good mix. That's kind of the fun part of the neutral sites. And we usually travel well, and obviously with a big BYU population in that area, LDS population, we expect to have a large group of our guys there, and hopefully we don't disappoint. So we're excited for the opportunity.
Appreciate the visit and the time, Ty. Thanks.
Thank you. Have a great day.
It's Ty Detmer there via Skype from Provo, Utah, offensive coordinator and quarterback coach, 1980 Heisman Trophy winner for the 1990 Heisman Trophy winner for the BYU Cougars. Good stuff there. Appreciate Ty Detmer. Sports360AZ.com. We partner with the Arizona Republic, AZ Central Sports. There's plenty of content up on our website right now that you can check out. Sports360AZ.com. That's a website. And again, we partner with AZ Central Sports. Thanks for being with us.